Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. In this episode, I speak with Tony Marinucci, a registered dietitian and all-around very kind, sweet, intelligent young woman. And we speak about a lot, but specifically emotional eating versus boredom eating and overall how to develop a healthier relationship with food. I hope you enjoy the episode. If you do, please leave a review on iTunes. They've been helping a lot. And as always, if you are looking for home or bodyweight workouts or an incredible community to be a part of, the Inner Circle is available. You can join today, www.sfinnercircle.com. Enjoy the episode. Tony.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. How's everything going?
So far, so good. Can't complain.
Are you in New York right now?
Yeah. So I live in Westchester County, right outside the city. So not as affected as the city in the sense of like all, you know, the crowdingness. And like I just actually got back from a run. So fortunately, I know in the city, like everyone, even the parks are crowded. Like even if you go outside, you like can't, you know.
It's
so
insane.
Fortunately, here is not too bad.
Got it. Good. And everyone's good. Family's good.
Yeah. How are you?
Yeah. Fortunately, everyone is all right. Just in home.
I know. Crazy.
But so do me a favor. Just like take a minute to introduce yourself. Tell people where you're from, what you do. Just like I literally, you know, the thing when you're sitting at a desk and you put your elbow on the table and it slips off and it goes right down. I did that one. Just tell everyone like who you are, where you're from, what you do. Just introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Tony Marinucci. I'm a registered dietitian and I own a business called Diet Tips with Tony. It actually started as a blog about 10, 11 years ago when I was studying school to become a dietitian, when I was in school to become one. And then, you know, as I grew and I went into all these different fields and working in all these different locations, I always had this passion for helping people and more of the preventative care. So I'm not sure how many people who are listening are familiar with where a registered dietitian can work, but we can work anywhere, like from hospital settings to nursing homes to daycare facilities. And I did all of those things. I actually loved it. I'd have like four or five jobs at a time, just like getting, like absorbing all of that I could. But the favorite thing that I always did was like blogging and just like sharing my personal journey, because I grew up overweight and very insecure. And I noticed that as I changed my eating habits, I started getting more confident in my skin and I started feeling better. And so I lost weight on my own. And I like to say I made a physical and mental transformation. Like it was a lot more, as you know, than just like the physical outlook. But just my whole life just seemed to improve the more I focused on developing a healthier relationship with food and not looking at it as the enemy anymore. And so I decided to make my blog into a business where I started coaching people online. And now it's like the only thing I do, and it's successfully have grown it to the place where, you know, I'm fortunate where I've been working from home for over a year now and just coaching clients virtually. It's like really, really cool, helping them find their healthy relationship with their eating habits.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Huge congrats. I love that.
Thank you so much.
So talk to me. I know we were speaking a little bit before this, but like during this time frame, during like either whether it's this time frame or not, what do you want to talk about? I know you said you spoke about something specific during your TEDx talk. Do you want to just sort of give some background on that and we can dive in from there?
Yeah. So very early on, I learned the lesson that restriction wasn't the answer, was part of the problem. And I started, you know, I think like anybody, when you first start losing weight, you think, oh, I just need to eat less and exercise more. And we know how like a dangerous, deadly combo that is. Mm-hmm. So it led to this like crazy cycle of over under eating and just really like unpleasant. I had no energy. It was just not great at all. But fortunately, I kind of caught on pretty quickly and I realized like, okay, this can't be the way. There has to be a better way. So that's when I started like, you know, making the small changes, like drinking more water, eating more vegetables, you know, watching portions, reading labels, stuff like that. So what I always tell people is that like, that's something that I learned relatively quickly, and I'm really good at it. Like I'm very confident. I'm a really good registered dietitian, and I finally learned how to eat well and all that. I didn't have the same experience when it came to dating. And I would date all of the wrong men. And I use this analogy where I've said, I spent the majority of my 20s dating five versions of the same guy, just with a different name and a different face.
What was that guy? What was the version?
Someone that, like, you would think this is what a girl would want. I was like, I was their everything. But meaning, like, they didn't really, they couldn't hold a job. You know, we fell in love really, really quickly, but like, there weren't someone I could really bring to, like, around my family. Like, my family didn't really enjoy them. Like, you know, inside the walls of, like, our apartment were, like, okay, but it was nothing substantial. It was nothing that it was like, you know, maybe that was okay when I was younger, but I'm about to be 30. And it's like, at a certain point, you kind of want something that's a little bit more, you know, substantial, right?
You actually said something that's really interesting to me. And I think it's a topic, I mean, I don't discuss dating very much, but I think it's really interesting. You're like, you were their everything. And you're like, it sounds like something that theoretically might sound great, but in practice, you'd want someone that has a passion, something to go after, sure. Something that you're actually not there, but you're important, but it's not like you're the only thing they have.
Exactly. 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 And it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of everything. You feel like there's no room for error. And I kind of was, it was like, even when it came down to the end of ending the relationships, it was all about like not wanting to hurt them. Never once considering my feelings, my emotions. And that's something that I probably carried from my childhood and, like, you know, the way I grew up and stuff. But either way, the reason why I bring that up is because what I've noticed with my clients before they would start working with me is they would jump from diet to diet and they would think each one was different. But really, when you unpacked it, they were the same exact thing. They all relied on restriction. Like, it was just a different form of restriction. And so at first you'd get a little bit frustrated. Like, and I'm sure you can relate. Like, you're just like, don't they see it? Don't they get it? But like, then again, like, I've made the same mistakes. It's like, you're not, until you're open, one, you have to be open to seeing it first. And then two, you do really need to kind of, I mean, it sounds silly, but like, until I like went to therapy and like clearly defined like what it is that I want to find in a man or like the values that I'm looking for, that was the only way I was going to be able to find it. But if you kind of just like go into a diet, not 100% sure what you want, and it's like just solely on a feeling that's like, you know, the highs are highs and the lows are lows, that's not good. Mm-hmm. So it's important to kind of identify what it is that you're looking for. And the only way to do that is looking back on your past experiences, which is something else I talk about in the talk, which is that's like the main thing is introspection, looking inside ourselves and really being honest and asking what worked well in that relationship or in that nutrition plan and what did not work well at all and why. That's always the biggest question. The answer is why. Because to be honest, something could work. Like I said, there's times where certain relationships in my early 20s can work, but not in my 30s. And I think nutrition's the same way. Like, it's okay to like have a short-term fling and like really just try to push yourself and really see how lean you can get if you understand that's the reason. But if you're doing it with the intention of this is a forever thing, that's the problem. And I think it's really important for us to be able to recognize why we're doing something, and then being able to pinpoint the positives and the negatives of that to help us create a future that we want.
I think I love that. I especially love the analogy where it's okay. It's number one, it's okay to do it. But number two, it's like, if you want to have a short-term fling, you want to do some rapid fat loss, totally fine. Know why you're doing it, know how you're going to do it, and mm-hmm. also understand that the longer-term view of it all. And not to mention, you could even take it further. I really love this analogy where it's like, even if you date somebody, it's my sink going right there. just like the drain is just going. I'm in an Airbnb right now, and we have a garbage disposal at the Airbnb.
Yeah.
But we couldn't find the switch. We couldn't find like the switch to actually make it work. So the water just kept coming up and coming up, coming up. So I called the person who owns it. I was like, "Hey, like, do you have a switch for the garbage disposal?" He was like, I'll call the plumbers." So the plumbers show up and are in Boston, and the plumbers are like, "This is the weirdest thing we've ever seen. You got a garbage disposal, but no switch." And so literally I had to pull it all out today. Anyway. Basically,
oh, man.
In the same way, when you're dating someone, even if they're not right for you, or even if they treated you terribly, or even if you treated them terribly, whatever it is, mm-hmm. you learn from every relationship. right? Like you learn from everyone, and everyone that you meet and interact with, they contribute to who you are today, and and vice versa. And I think that's actually a really good way to look at nutrition and dieting. It's like everything that you try will teach you and help you become a better, more advanced dieter, eater, whatever you want to call it. So I love that. You were talking about introspection, and you were talking about knowing why you're doing it. From your experience and working with people and just observing, why do you think most people do what they do? Why? What do you think the why usually is?
So it always starts from a negative place. I wish I could say that a majority of people come to me because they already are just like feeling really good about themselves and just like want to put boundaries a little bit. But unfortunately, it really comes from this place of like not being able to look, like they don't like the way they look in the mirror. They don't like the way that they feel. They don't have the confidence to date. That is a lot of times it. But as we actually work together, they start to realize like it's not really about that. You know, it's more so about, you know, they just want to feel good every day. They want to have the energy every day. But I think it comes down to like just treating yourself better. Like you deserve to take care of yourself better. And then that's usually what like gets unpacked throughout the whole thing. So it's a lot more than just like the aesthetic goals. It's really more of just like being able to set those boundaries and say that I matter. Cause most people who come to me are taking care of everybody else but themselves.
Okay. So how do you go about helping someone? Like, what do you start with? Like, where do you begin?
So obviously always kind of learning about their history. So and it's really helpful actually to, you know, hear them say all of the different kind of things that they have tried, because it does a couple things. Number one, it helps them see it, because when they say it out loud and then they realize like, wow, for 25 years, I've been losing and gaining the same 10 pounds, going from diet to diet, expecting to be able to get massive amounts of results in a short period of time. And I've done it for 25 years. And I don't say that to them. I ask them questions and it makes it come out. And then they say it. And it's like, until they realize it, until they want to change, until they really see it, then that's the only thing that's going to actually make them change. So
What kind of questions do you ask? Like how would that conversation go?
So I usually ask questions. I ask why three times. I think, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but it's really helpful. So I'll be like, okay, so what is it about my program? So it's usually when they want to work with me one-on-one. What is it about my program that makes you want to work with me? And they'll usually be like, oh, because I want to lose weight. And you seem to have a more like healthy living sort of approach. And it's like, okay, that's great. Why? Well, because I've done all the other things before and they haven't worked for me. Why haven't they worked for you? Mm-hmm. And then they'll usually say, well, you know, I'll follow it for like a few weeks and then like I can't follow it anymore. And I'll be like, why do you think that is? Well, I'm not sure. Like maybe that's where you can help. And then we'll kind of unpack what was actually within that plan. Mm-hmm. And then that's actually what helps me going forward. So one thing that comes to mind that's pretty common, and I'm sure you see it as well, like, you know, keto is really, really popular and a lot of people will do keto. And I mean, I have my own beliefs about just overall health versus like, there's many ways to lose weight, but then like, I also want you to be healthy. And I just do not feel like that is healthy. But at the same time, those who go on it and respond to it really well, I often find when they come to me, we find out that there was probably like a gluten sensitivity or possibly allergy. Like it's like, that's why it was so great for you. Like, that's why you were never bloated. That's why you had a ton of energy, because you removed an allergen from your diet. And now it's like, okay, so we don't need to obviously restrict carbohydrates so low and you never touch them. But maybe we know that you respond better when we are a little bit lower carb, or we remove some of those allergies or foods that you're sensitive to. And that was helpful for that. Mm-hmm. Right? So it doesn't matter like how long it takes them to see it. As long as we get something out of it, it's really helpful. And then my job as a dietitian is to kind of piece together all of the parts from their past and all of the things that they're currently going through, and helping them kind of work through being able to find something that's sustainable for them.
That makes total sense. It's a really good point too. And it sort of goes to one of the things for me is I'll never say don't do keto, just period. Right. Like personally, I'm not the biggest fan of it. Like
I don't personally like it. And I don't think for the vast majority of people it's sustainable or healthy. But like you just said, there are some cases in which, number one, it can work well. And oftentimes the people who've been like, you know what, it's worked really well for me. It's not necessarily because of keto. It's because of through doing that, they ended up removing something else that was actually bothering them. I think it's a really good point that isn't discussed that much, or at least I don't hear it discussed that much. So in regard to everything going on right now, right? Yeah. With so many people being quarantined, with so much uncertainty and stress and anxiety and fear, what do you see going on nutritionally? Like what patterns are you seeing among people who are who might either be struggling with their nutrition or with their fitness or mental health? Like, what do you see going on?
So I see the two sides. And this is something we see whether quarantine's going on or not, but I think in a crisis, it's escalated, right? So some people respond to stress with needing massive amounts of control. And so what some people are doing now is they are feeling this pressure to like exercise every single day. And maybe because they can't go to the gym, they feel like they have to do double workouts. And because their nutrition isn't so controlled, they feel like they have to track every morsel of food and measure everything. So I'm seeing a little bit of that. And then I'm also seeing a lot of just like, it's just not possible. Like, I'm not, you know, and so just like, just completely not disregarding the fact that eating well is important. And listen, there are challenges. Like, we're limited to how frequently we can go to the grocery store. It's not advised to go frequently. When you get orders, if you order groceries, I mean, half the stuff I ordered didn't actually come. So now I'm actually going to the store, but then I'm on the third floor. There's only so much I can carry. Like, you know, like there's lots of barriers, right? So like there's realistic things, but we know that just because something's difficult, that doesn't mean it's impossible. It just means we have to be a little bit more intentional about it and strategic about it. So I've been seeing both sides. Now, what I will say is this really is a very unique situation, and we've never experienced this before, and everyone is experiencing it differently. I'm very fortunate. I have always worked from home. I have my two cats. My boyfriend was here with his daughter, but they actually went down to Virginia to like get away from it all. He wanted to like protect her from potentially getting it. Like, I'm by myself. So like, I don't really have excuses. But then you have people who are working moms. I have clients who are teachers and supposed to teach their kids. They're teaching and I have one client, her husband is off the boat. He doesn't speak English well, so he can't teach his 6 and 7 year old kids anything. So like, what is he gonna do? So this poor woman, so like, she's an example of someone who's been, I had to tell her, I'm like, you need to slow down. She was trying to do it all. She was trying to teach her own students, teach her own children, doing double workouts, you know, dialing up her nutrition. And I would never tell her to do that, but it was her way of gaining control of the situation. So we had to kind of talk about like, it's okay. Like, now might not be the time. Like, I think she was more disappointed because she was really crushing it. You know, she's been in my program for about 3 months, you know, she really was gaining momentum. And it's just like, all of a sudden it's like massive barriers and a halt, you know? So we kind of talked through about like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to put in that much effort. Chances are you might still lose weight, who knows? But either way, it's okay, because this is temporary, and because we're working on habits and behaviors and strategies for a long-term solution, like, once this is over, everything will be fine. You'll be able to go back and everything will be fine, but now might not be the time to like go full throttle.
Yeah. What did she say to that?
I think she was really relieved. I think she just wanted that permission. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, I told her we're obviously doing it slowly, and that's always how I do it. I said, okay, well, no more double workouts, and I need you to give yourself one day off a week. Like, just one day. You can go for a walk, but like, you're not, you know, let yourself sleep till 7. Like, can anybody sleep till 7? Like, we all can sleep until 7. It's a miracle. Let yourself sleep. So yeah, so that's one example. And then, you know, I have other people that I just kind of see where it's just like, oh, I'm going to get, you know, all the memes and stuff. And like, they're funny, but like, you're not, it's like there's a meme and it's pretty funny. It's like, I'm either going to come out of this 15 pounds heavier or an alcoholic. And I'm like, but like, they're funny, but like, realistically, like, that shouldn't be the case if you're you know, just being mindful. I mean, one thing I do work on with a lot of people is managing emotional eating. Mm-hmm. And that is a serious thing that you could gain weight during this time if you don't manage your emotions in the proper way. Because they are like all over the place, like right now. Because like I said, everyone's being affected by this differently. So we have to, you know, be mindful of that. And so it's just important to teach people on either side that you don't have to, it's not about the all or nothing. It's never been about the all or nothing. It's not that. So honestly, how you handle the healthy habits and your eating styles and all that now is not going to be that much different, you know, when it's all over. Because I think that's the biggest thing that I think people need to recognize is that it's nothing fancy. It's the simplest things. Like, just move your body regularly, drink a lot of water, eat your veggies, have some protein. Like, you know, it's going to be okay.
How do you recommend, do you have any either strategies or ideas or principles that you follow to help people with emotional eating, like people who maybe, and we'll call it emotional. And I think we have to make the distinction between emotional and boredom. Like, a lot of people oftentimes conflate the two, just like, well, boredom eating is not emotional eating. But do you have any strategies or principles to follow for that?
Yeah, I mean, technically you could argue that eating out of boredom is emotional eating, because technically the way I define emotional eating is eating any time outside of hunger, which is very often, the reason why I say that is because I don't want people to think it's a bad thing. So we are human beings. We're going to eat emotionally. Sometimes we eat when we're happy. Sometimes mm-hmm. we eat when we're sad. Sometimes we eat when we're bored. And so anytime it's outside of physiological hunger, therefore I would call it emotional eating. Because you're trying not to be bored, just like you're trying not to be sad, or you're trying not to be stressed, or you're trying not to be angry. So the purpose of food is to cope, to take away from that emotion. But we know that even if you were, instead of using food, you were using drugs or alcohol, you know, which is more frowned upon, and it makes you kind of think before you do that. Then when you come down from that high, or when you have your hangover, you're like, why did I do that? You know, and so the same thing happens with the food. So,
I don't disagree with that. I've never thought about it in that way. Usually when I categorize them, I tend to categorize boredom eating as something you do mainly like you're not even thinking about it. Oftentimes, like, there's not much going on. You might not have any responsibilities in the moment. You go to the fridge. It's the thing where you go to the fridge 7 times in a day. You open it up expecting to see something different every time. You just start snacking literally because why not? Whereas emotional eating might be something to the effect of you're sad, you're anxious, you're scared, you're worried, you're angry. And in that moment, oftentimes it's in your head, you're like, I don't want to be doing this right now, but I'm going to do this because it will make me feel better type of a thing. That's how I've always categorized it. But I think I think you're right. It's, they could definitely be in the same category.
Yeah. And I think it depends also too, always on the person. Like, mm-hmm. I work with a lot of women, and so they say it's because they were bored. But when we unpack it, it's like, maybe they were lonely. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know that, because that's also common too. Like, if I didn't do all the work that I did, me being here in quarantine alone, it would be a freaking free-for-all. Like, it could be really bad. But because, you know, I've worked on my, like, personal development, and I genuinely love my own company, and, like, you know, this is like, to me, I'm enjoying this time, I don't feel the need to eat. And so I may
because you have, like, so many things going on, right?
Because I have things going on, and because, like, I no longer look at, like, you have to remember, a lot of people will eat emotionally, but they'll also, like, didn't eat all day. Mm-hmm. So they also, like, when you have the combination of, like, physiological hunger and then psychological hunger, it's a deadly combination, mm-hmm. you know? So that's kind of what I mean by that, is, like, this could be a situation where they, you know, someone will say they're bored, but when you really unpack it, it's like, well, you know, they are just home alone, and, like, they were feeling like, this isn't, you know, I don't really want to be here. Like, it can be more than that. So it kind of depends.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But anyways, just to circle back on strategies. So there's definitely a few things. I think that the main thing I always tell someone is to kind of is we have to create some sort of pause and we have to think. And the biggest thing to do is I always tell people to like play out the end of that scenario. So if you were to now go into have maybe the ice cream is the thing that's calling your name and you were to have it, do you feel like you could have a small portion of it? Does that little portion mean you're going to have the whole pint or the whole gallon? Does that gallon mean you're going to now raid the cabinets because you're like, screw it? And I'm just, you know, so play out the movie. What is the end of that scene? And how do you feel at the end? If you can say that you genuinely at the end were like, you know what, that wasn't so bad. I'm glad that I did it. Like, screw it, like whatever. And I'm like, fine. But most of the time we know that the end of that story is like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. Now I'm gonna like, I have to like eat nothing tomorrow. And it just ends that vicious cycle. So that's like the biggest thing is play out the movie. The other thing is always to like, it's different for each person, but finding your coping mechanism outside of food. So for some people it's writing in a journal. Some people it's going for a walk. Right now we're limited in our space, but if you could even just go into it, take a shower, chew gum, have some tea. So, you know, those are different strategies that you can utilize as well.
Got it. So let's say you have someone who says their story at the end of it is like they're super upset, they regret doing it. What do you have them do? They regret getting to the end of that story. So like, okay, so I don't want that to be my story tonight. So what do you have them do instead?
Yeah. So I ask them, you typically like, what do you feel like you need right now? And they'll maybe say something sweet or something salty. So I say, what do you have available that can give you that same satisfaction? And so even though they're still technically eating out of emotion because they're not physically hungry and they just want something sweet, but they're saying maybe they're having like chocolate-covered strawberries. 5 chocolate-covered strawberries, it's not that bad compared to a pint of ice cream that they would have normally had, right? So it's like all about like kind of helping them to have that craving and satisfy that without overindulging. So it's just swapping it out for something better. And then also it's a lot of times too, like I said, going back to like the physiological hunger that sometimes drives it, especially anxiety. A lot of anxiety makes you not hungry and you don't want to eat, which then leads you to the point of like being ravenous. And so if you're being really anxious all day and you haven't really eaten, I'll usually typically ask them like, what did you eat today? Like, let's go over that. And it's like, oh well, you didn't really eat that much. Like, let's maybe have a meal and see if that makes you feel a little bit better, you know, and kind of do that. And then sometimes too, it's just like super late at night and I'm like, I know you really want this, but I also know that you want to go to sleep. Just go to bed. Like, just go to sleep. And you'll forget that you ever wanted it and it'll be a great day and you'll be really proud of yourself for getting through that moment.
So there's an interesting point here that I see a lot of people miss out the individualization aspect of it, but you brought up a point to the effect of, okay, well, so the end of this story is having the pint of ice cream, so we'll have the chocolate-covered strawberries instead. You can satisfy the craving, and you're going to feel better about it at the end. On the other hand, I know there are some people who would be like, well, hold on. Like, if you want to have the ice cream, just have the ice cream. Like, what's the problem with that? So how do you sort of balance this one idea? Because some people will say restriction is inherently bad, which – I disagree with for many reasons. Restriction isn't inherently bad. It's how you restrict, how much you restrict, what you restrict, why you restrict, all of this. So how do you sort of balance?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I'll give you my example if we weren't in quarantine, and then I'll give you a new one if we are. So, I mean, I guess it kind of relates, but so my biggest thing, you very often tell people, to not buy the things that they know they can't control, like their trigger foods, where it's like they know themselves. They know that sorry to demonize ice cream right now, but we're just going to talk.
We're not demonizing it. We're just using it as an example. Someone's going to be in like the review section. They demonized ice cream.
but it's just like, it's the example that came to me. So, say you know that like you can't have ice cream in your freezer because when it's there, you really just, you've tried 1,000 times, you've done it 1,000 times, you just can't control the amount. So I usually tell people to just don't leave it in your freezer. Just don't leave it as an option. However, if after a very long day of work, you come home, you take a shower, and you're like, I really want ice cream, and you're willing to get up and go out after a super long day of work and like go to Carvel or a drive-thru or Dairy Queen or whatever, and like, then yes, please have the ice cream. That's amazing, because if you're will, if you want it that badly, then go get it. But if you just, sometimes we don't give ourselves that moment of thinking before choosing. And so we think we want something, but when we really ask ourselves, like, I don't really want it, you know? So that's one example. And then in this example, I think with quarantine, with it being, you know, that might be difficult. I mean, you could just try to just not buy it and see if you're fine. But if you do have it, I always ask people, like, when was the last time you had it? And how much did you have? And what are your goals? Like, if you don't have like a specific goal, it doesn't really matter to me. I mean, it does matter, I think, in your general health, but like individually, like, it's fine. But like, if you're really trying to lose weight, right, and be healthy, we can't expect you to have, overdo it on the ice cream 2 to 3 times a week. It's just gonna be really difficult, not ideal, right? So my biggest question is, like, when's the last time you had ice cream? And it was like, I had it on Saturday and it's Tuesday. It's like, do you still really want it? You know, kind of think like things like that. Just having them think through it. Like, I'm never going to make someone feel bad for making a choice that they make. I just want, it's going back to the introspection. My job is not to have them need me for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. My job is to teach them how to eat for their individual needs so that they know how to feed themselves for the rest of their lives.
I think that's great. I think this is where it sort of gets a little bit murky, right? And these waters get murky, because on one hand, there's the crowd of people who are like, if you want to eat it, right? Just if you want to eat it. Mm-hmm. It's like, and then on the other hand, I think you and I tend to fall in the crowd of like, well, nothing is inherently off limits. Mm-hmm. But if you know you're going to eat something uncontrollably, then we have to figure out strategies to make that, to help you develop a healthier relationship with food. Because I'm not a fan of the argument or the train of thought that says, if you just want something, eat it and eat it until you're full. Yeah, I think it's a very short-sighted way to go about it. And I wanted to have this discussion with you because I think you and I are on the same page with this. And I see a lot of recently they've labeled themselves like the intuitive eating crowd, which is like, they often are like, well, just eat whatever you want intuitively. If you intuitively want the ice cream, then eat the ice cream. I'm like, well, hold on. Let's think about this from an overall, and usually the argument is oftentimes like, weight doesn't define your health. I'm like, that's correct. But there's more to health than weight. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things going on. And if we want to talk about mental health, which a lot of people say that they talk about, but they don't actually, eating an entire pint of ice cream just because you intuitively want it is not healthy mentally and also physically or emotionally. Right. And just giving into that is a very poor strategy for your overall health.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's where I think it's really important to work with, and it's hard to know what's the right professional, but to work with a professional that, I think when you focus on behavior, when you have like behavior-based coaching, it's a lot easier to help you to identify what it is that you need. But if you're following, and I don't mean to knock it, because it's just the same thing of like, you know, you're still a learning experience, right? Mm-hmm. But like, if you're following like a macro coach or an intuitive eating coach, or like, it's just, you're going to learn that. And like, that could be fine. And that might work for you, but it also might not work for you. And there are other ways. And so that's the approach that I know that you take. And that's what I take, which is, I have clients that I can't call myself an intuitive eating dietitian, because I'm not, that's not the type of dietitian that I am. But I've worked through exploration, knowing that macros, you know, they did it for a while and it worked okay, but it wasn't their favorite, and like tracking, like taking photos of their food, and like it started to get them more obsessive than mm-hmm. was helpful. We went more of an intuitive eating approach, and I really just probed questions. I had them keep a journal of like asking, like, how does this food make you feel? Like, you know, stuff like that, like being able to pay attention to their hunger cues and all those things. Whereas I have other people that literally will track macros the rest of their life, and they love it. it's like their favorite thing. It's like, they love the puzzle piece. They love flexible dieting. Like, that's the thing that they're going to do forever. And I think it all really comes down to, and honestly, that's what my TED talk was about. It's like, at the end of the day, like, that guy, those guys that weren't for me are great for somebody else. That doesn't, they're not bad guys. They're just not for me. And I think that's the biggest thing that I want people to learn is that there's nothing that's inherently good or bad, whether it's a diet or a food or a person. It's just figuring out what is going to make you the best version of you.
I love that. And I think and I'm clearly biased here, but that's why I think generally behavior-based coaching is the better way to go. Mainly because a macro coach, we'll call it, or whatever it is, will always it's mainly focused on macros. Right. Just like by nature, by definition, that's what they're focusing on. Intuitive eating is solely focused on intuitive eating. Everyone must fit into that box. Mm-hmm. Every client who goes into the macro coaching must be counting macros. Every client that goes into intuitive eating must be doing intuitive eating. Every client that goes into keto must be doing keto. Every client that goes into intermittent fasting must be doing intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. But when you have a more behavior-based approach, you understand there are pros and cons to every method. You understand there are pros and cons to each method, and each individual at different points in their life might need something else. At one point in your life, sort of like when you're younger, maybe you're into like one kind of person. And when you get older, you're like, you know what? That kind of person wasn't that good for me. So I'm more into this kind of a person now. Same thing. Like when I'm younger, you know, maybe the intermittent fasting works really well for me. But as I got older, you know, that doesn't work for me anymore because I'm up so much earlier, whatever it is. I think so. That's why focusing on behavior and individual needs will long-term win out because it allows you to focus on what that individual needs at that given point in time. And it's impossible to, especially when you're just getting into all of this and you don't have much of an educational background, you don't know who to trust or who to believe. There's so many different voices. But generally speaking, one rule of thumb that I've found works very well is if someone is basically saying their way is the only way, like their way, like it must be this, it must be calorie counting, or it must be intuitive eating, or it must be keto, and everything else is inherently worse, usually steer clear of that person, mainly because it's never as black and white as that.
Yeah, for sure. And you said something interesting that I kind of feel like it was a good time to elaborate on a little bit. And I can't remember exactly the point, but it was something like, oh yeah, you were saying how, you know, one guy or one diet like might have been good for you at one point and maybe they're not good for you then. And then it just made me think too, like sometimes you don't, like actually a lot of times, like you don't have to follow a diet and you do not have to be in a relationship to be happy. Mm-hmm. Like, and so one part of my talk and in the book I elaborate on this more is like, it took me a while, but I finally learned that like, happiness wasn't dependent on the number on a scale or whether or not I had a date lined up for Friday night. Like, if anything, time off is sometimes exactly what we need to realize that that's not, you know, happiness isn't dependent on those things that we thought they were. Like, it's okay to not be following something, you know, but that also doesn't mean that we, like, and if we're going to talk about relationship stuff, but like, just because you're not following something or you're not dating doesn't mean you're just like going out and like, ruining everyone. And it also doesn't mean that you're just like eating whatever you want and like never moving your body. Like, you know, it's okay to just to not do something, but that doesn't mean that you're like not, you know, everything has to go to crap because of it. So I just wanted to make that
point. I think it's a great point. So what do you recommend to people? Let's say they're not following any specific nutrition protocol or they don't necessarily have that, something like that in mind. What do you say to them, or what do you have them do to encourage them to just not let it go to one end of the spectrum, either going all in and going overboard or doing literally nothing at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the basics, which to be honest, it's what I start most people on before we really do anything, which is tracking your water. Like just, you know, you don't even have to track. You don't even have to track in that time, but just make sure that if you feel thirsty, you're already dehydrated. So try to drink with your meals and like drink, you know, a cup of, if you have a cup of coffee, drink, not that coffee dehydrates you, we're both coffee fans, but just the analogy I use, like if you have a cup of coffee, I have a cup of water. Like I just do it like, you know, cause I'm a huge, if I didn't do that, I literally would never drink water. So, but like, so yeah, so just, you know, monitoring, like being mindful of like added sugar, lots of fried foods, like kind of really more so going on, like you still want to eat vegetables, like you got to eat your veggies, you know, cook your proteins lean most of the time. Like, I mean, I think honestly, it's more of the basics. Just get 7 to 8 hours of sleep, sometimes 9. Honestly, I don't know if it's because I'm going to be 30, but like, I feel like more people, we need like 8 to 9 hours. Like, I don't know what 7 to 8 came from, because like I notice a huge difference when I get 8 to 9 hours. Like my performance is better, my focus is better. Like sometimes I can get away with 7, but like I'm starting to preach 8 to 9 more often. So yeah, so I would just focus on like just your total health, you know. That's kind of the main things. And like in those situations, you know, it's if you want to have the ice cream, have the ice cream, you know. Just don't get an extra, extra large sundae with all of the things on it. Just like get ice cream.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw this, but I'm literally cycling between water and coffee as we talk. Like I just go sip, yeah. Sip. I agree with you completely. I think the area that I've found a lot of people struggle with here is, let's say you have someone who, and actually I very much think that I'm in this boat right now. And ever since I really started to focus on my business, as opposed to my competitive lifting career, right? So I was a competitive power lifter for years. I lifted 4 times my body weight, and like I didn't miss a workout for over 5 years. Like yeah. I was so strict, so rigid, and that's not what I tell other people to do. But if you want to be an elite athlete, then that's what you're going to do. Totally. And then after I deadlifted 4 times my body weight, I then switched to basically, all right, like I don't care about that anymore. I just want to focus on my business. My workout frequency went down. I still worked out, but I wasn't as rigid about it. The workouts weren't as long or as intense. I still eat very healthy. I still have a lot of fruits and vegetables, drink a lot of water, but I didn't make that my life because that was no longer my goal. My goal was then to reach more people, impact more people, build my business. So I think what also as a result came of that is I'm not nearly as lean as I was when I was a competitive powerlifter. Like my body fat is no longer sub 10%. It's like I walk around closer to like 14, 15% now. So that's okay. I think along with this, what we have to understand, it's so easy to look at social media, look at people who might be very high level physique competitors or athletes, or look at them, posting the Photoshopped pictures they have themselves, whatever it is, and be like, well, that's what I need. But it's not what you need, number one. And number two is you have to understand if you're not at a point in your life in which that's your main goal and you are therefore not going to be as strict or as rigid, then you have to understand expectation wise, you don't expect to be losing weight every week if you're not being as strict as you need to be in order to lose weight every week.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. No, like 100%. That happens very often. Yeah, I'm thinking of one of my clients who, I mean, we have a lot of work to do just because unfortunately, you know, it's hard when you grow up with a parent who diets, like your just relationship with food is just ruined like forever because and they still do it even as you're older. Like, so, but we implemented it. I know you're a big fan of this too. And it can be helpful depending on the person, but we implemented for this week because she felt like she wasn't seeing the results that she wanted. We implemented like weighing in every single day. She was frustrated that she wasn't losing weight, so I said, okay, let's weigh in every day, and let's just kind of see your fluctuations, you know, because if you're weighing once every, she wasn't weighing consistently, so like we didn't know, the scale was kind of all over the place, so I was like, okay, let's weigh every day and see where you're at. And she was disappointed because as she was weighing in, it was going up. But she was sending me her food records. And I was like, to be honest, it shouldn't be going up. Like, I'm looking at these records and I'm just like, I was like, maybe it's your port. I'm like, can you tell me more about your portions? Because if you're really eating this for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and these snacks, like, even with large portions, I'm like, it can't be. So anyways, we got on the call yesterday and she was like, well, I definitely don't want to weigh myself every day because I don't like looking at the number. But like also, I mean, I was eating like cookies and cakes and everything. And I was like, oh, like, that's why. So that's
was
like.
Was she just not reporting that?
She was not reporting that. That's so it took her a little bit to like tell me on the call. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that actually makes me feel better. Because like I thought, in my mind, I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And so then she like opened up about it. And so I was like. Okay, so that's like a really good example of like we cannot expect to lose weight. And like, I mean, some people might be able to do that, but most people who are like, she's like really tiny. Unfortunately, when you're shorter, you have, and then you're a woman and you're like, you just had a baby, like you, there's like no wiggle room for like for like cookies every day and cake every day. It's just like not gonna happen. And to expect weight loss is just
I'm 5'4". Like there's no way. I'm 5'4". Yeah. Like it's it's just, it's not going to happen, especially if I really want to get super lean. But that point is so important. And I literally, someone just asked me, I did a Q&A on Instagram the other day. Someone said something to the effect of, I'm mostly, and mostly was in parentheses, I mostly hit my calories, but I also mostly eat carbs. Is that why I'm not losing weight? And I was like, no, you're not losing weight because your quote unquote mostly is statistically rarely. Yeah. And basically what that means is even when people are counting and reporting their calories, and this is, I'm not making this up. You didn't make that story up. This is in the literature, very clear. Yeah. People who struggle to lose weight statistically underestimate how many calories they're eating. And it works in reverse. People who struggle to gain weight statistically overestimate how much they're eating. So it's one of those things where if you are trying to lose weight, then you need to, number one, be very honest with what you're eating and how much. And you also need to be very honest with what is realistic and feasible right now, like in this moment, and in terms of mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, environmentally, all of this stuff. Like if I was at home right now, and like I am home, but if I had three kids and I was like trying to like work from home and they were all running around and I had to try and homeschool them and all this other stuff, which is a very real situation for many people right now. Yeah. I would say probably not the best idea to be focusing on fat loss right now, unless you can actually control that. But if you struggle with food and you have all this extra stuff that you've never dealt with before, probably not the best idea.
Right. Yeah. If you have the foundations before and like, yeah, if you're maybe like an experienced person, like in fitness or registered dietitian that like has this healthy relationship with food and understands calories and macros and all that, it might not be that challenging for you because you've been doing it for so long. But if you're trying to do that and it's kind of relatively new for you and you're also trying to establish new routines and you're literally, this is just like a new life for most people. It's really difficult. It's like when someone comes to me and we've been working together and now they change jobs. It's like, it's going to be difficult. That transitional period of a new schedule, a new commute and all that stuff. It's like, we have to be realistic that might not be ideal, you know.
100%. And I think equally important, I know you and I are very much on the same page with this, is if you're trying to lose weight on a foundation of an unhealthy relationship with food, it's not going to work. Can't expect to lose weight and keep it off if you have an unhealthy relationship with food. Right. And I think what usually happens is many people who, whether they go to you or whatever, they want to lose weight, they're coming to you with some form of an unhealthy relationship with food, which as a coach, you have to teach, work through first. That comes first. And oftentimes while you're doing that, they'll be losing weight, but it will be, the focus will be on improving their relationship with food, and weight loss is often a side effect of improving their relationship with food. I think right now, if you're so stressed out, you're living in an environment and a life that you've never lived through before, that's super stressful and worrisome and anxious, and you have a very unhealthy relationship with food, then maybe focus first, like you said earlier, on improving your relationship with food, drinking more water, getting good sleep, making sure that you're eating good portion sizes, then transfer into weight loss. And oftentimes, if you start with that first, weight loss will come as a side effect.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like just for anybody that is listening that is super busy and is juggling children and working from home and all the other responsibilities, I would probably say to you, focus on the absolute basics, like Jordan just said. And then I usually do recommend like have a breakfast time, have a lunch time and have a dinner time, because that will help you to structure your day. And you're not doing anything crazy, but you are decreasing the likelihood of overeating or undereating or not eating something healthy or nutritious, right? Because if we go for long periods of time without eating, that's when our cravings come up. That's when we want more sugar, we want more fat, and it's really difficult. That's where we get hangry, irritable with our kids. One mom said to me this week, she's like, I feel really good. She was like, I barked at my kids a lot less today. I was like, okay, good. I don't think it had anything to do with like how I felt in my nutrition. I think they were just being annoying. Less barking. We're making progress.
Yeah, I, I love that. I think this is super, super helpful. Is there anywhere you just want to tell everyone where they can find you, and like if they decide they want to look and see how they can improve their nutrition right now?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm pretty active on Instagram, tips_with_Tony. That's Tony with an I. I'm not sure when you're going to put out this podcast, but me and some of my other registered dietitian friends, a trainer and a chef, have kind of partnered up. We're providing a free virtual summit for those kind of trying to learn how to navigate being at home, stuck in like with the quarantine and like creating healthier habits and routines. And so we're going to post that on April 18th. It's completely free, or if you do want to donate, we're giving 100% of the proceeds to No Kids Hungry. So that way we can support, you know, all the schools that have been shut down. A lot of kids are not getting the adequate food that they need. It's been really sad. So we want to be able to provide something there. So yeah, so if people want to learn more, that's going to be like a jam-packed day. It will be recorded, but obviously the people who attend live, I think, are going to get the most out of it. Everything from like cooking demos, to live workouts, to I'm talking mainly, I'll go more in depth about managing emotional eating, all different things. Even like someone's talking about setting those boundaries and family dynamics, and like maybe getting the kids involved and then maybe not getting the kids involved when it comes to certain things like cooking and what have you. So that's going to be on Saturday, April 18th. And then just in general, if anybody wants to learn more about me or working with me, go to www.tipsoftony.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This is great.
Thank you for having me, Jordan. You're amazing. Of course. I love your content. I mean, honestly, everything you put out is just really, really just, it's educational, informative, hysterical. Love it.
Thank you. And likewise, I love everything you're putting out. And so thank you. Have a wonderful day. All right.
You have a great day. Bye, Jordan.
Bye.
That wraps it up for this episode of the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And again, if you would like to join the inner circle, we have home workouts, we have bodyweight workouts, barbell workouts, powerlifting, kettlebell, every workout you can imagine, www.sfinnercircle.com. And also, most importantly, we have the best fitness community in the world. Have a wonderful day.